listen to our students.
In our classrooms are the future, the Maya Angelous, the Mother Teresa's, the Elon Musk's of the world. And can you imagine if we took the time to ask those students what would make a good teacher great? And then we actually listened. We could transform schools and education. Thank you.
That's so good.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, so good.
I actually have never asked my kids that, but I did send out some stuff a couple of years ago when I first started being a principal, and they had to name three people in the school setting who were adults who they thought trusted, who believed in them, that they trusted and believed in them. And I made sure that the teacher who had the class didn't deliver it to her students, so we took kind of sample kids across the school. And it was really disheartening and heartening at the same time. You know, like, there were some kids, and our difficult kids mostly, who didn't think that there was anyone in the school who actually fully believed that they could be better than they are. And then there were kids who could rattle off five or six people. And I think at that point, and I'd always known, but I think at that point it really narrowed down to me how important it was to build relationships with the kids that we teach and to know and to listen, to be there to hear exactly what it is that they are trying to say to us. Now, you guys have a disadvantage that you're only there a short time, but the advantage is that what you're actually teaching is good stuff. Like, it's not a boring algebra lesson or something like that. Yet what you're really trying to get, the messages you're trying to get across, are messages of being a good person. How can I get better at understanding my religion and being a better person as a result of it? So the advantage is that you're starting on a positive note, that you're not trying to drag them through something that is already, you know, a difficult situation for them. But the listening bit is interesting, and it goes back to what we talked about this morning about the challenging behaviour kids, in that so often kids come with issues that you're not aware of. They come with issues we're not aware of. You, however, have an even bigger disadvantage because you're there for a short amount of time once a week. But very quickly, those particular kids who you do get the opportunity to really listen to are the ones that you pick up on straight away, and you suddenly realise that there is something bigger at home. If you do come across those kids, I would encourage you to talk to the classroom teachers. Talk to them and ask them about those kids. I just noticed this particular child, da-da-da-da-da. You know, is there something I should know? Now, there'll be times when they can't tell you anything, but there'll also be times when they just say, you know, he lost his mum last week, or, you know, his brother passed away, or whatever it might be along the way that has a massive, massive impact. It can even be, you know, they moved house and just that move has made the difference. So I think he made some good points in there about, you know, being a great teacher just by taking the time to listen and thinking about the content that you're delivering. How do I really want this to go across? What is it that I really, really want the kids to have at the end of it? And that's why the intention of the lesson is so important. And we're going to have a little watch of a video a minute about that as well. So why do we plan lessons? Why do we bother doing it? If most often half an hour, if you've been doing this job for a while, you'd be able to whip in there and spiel half an hour. Me too. But at the end of the day, I can guarantee you that the sequence and the logic and the reason behind won't be as clear as if you actually had a plan for it. So the reason we do it is so that we can logically sequence a pattern of activities that make sense to kids and build on probably what they already know in their prior knowledge or introduce something different. It's a working document that can change, and I think exactly as Venerable Lee mentioned before, these are working documents. They're not set in concrete. They're not, for a better word, the Bible of speaking and teaching Buddhism. They really are a working document for you. And that's what it is for teachers as well. We scribble all over our programs and our plans all of the time. We change them to suit the kids that we have. And for you guys, you're seeing, you know, probably hundreds of different children across all of you. So this stuff won't suit every single child that you go to teach. And that's okay. You can modify and change it to suit you. This is just a structure. But it's a logical sequence of events that are going to get you to the learning intention at the top, and that's what you want. We have in our system a teaching and learning cycle where we would start with some form of assessment before we teach anything. So we might do a little pre-test of, say, we were teaching subtraction. We might start with a pre-test to find out those that can and those that can't and where the errors are being made. And then we would create our lesson plans according to what it was that that information was showing us. Again, you don't have the luxury of having the assessment beforehand, so you don't know what the kids know unless you've had them before and you're kind of aware of the sequence that you've run them through. So for you, it's a bit blindsided. The lesson plan is kind of the first part that you're going to deliver without the assessment. But throughout the cycle, and as we talk through this plan, throughout the cycle, you start to see times when you can do a little bit of informal assessment. You don't ever want to give the kids a test in scripture, take up all your time. There's no time for that. But at the same time, you can be monitoring and watching and seeing some of the things that give you really good cues as to, oh my gosh, this is just way too hard, or that's not working for that child and I'll need to fix it next time. It forms a fantastic record of what you teach. And again, when Nan Tien moved away from the Buddhist Council in order to be on their own, it was really important during the development of the scope and sequence, and fortunately I was a part of that. It was really important to make sure that we had a sequential movement through the years that they're at school of learning what Buddhism is about and how they can take on... the acts of goodness. No, goodness?
Three acts of goodness,
yes. How they can take those on, practice them, and make them appropriate to them. It was also really important not to get too deep, because the deeper you got, the more difficult it became. And as someone who isn't Buddhist, it was good for me to be able to ask those questions as we developed the scope and sequence to say, so what do you really want them to know by doing that? Like, what is the plan? Remember, they're 6 years old and all those sorts of things. So as these develop, please use them. Write all over them, draw them on them, change them. You know, it might even just be three or four kids that you put your name beside some part of it where you think, those three aren't going to cope there. I'm going to need to do something different with them. Because again, this is the best that you can do without having the knowledge of each and every one of the kids that you deal with. And it's also used for someone to cover your class. So it's going to happen. It's inevitable that even though you're only there half an hour a week, there will be times when you can't get there and someone else has to do it for you. And if you don't have something for them to do, then it really will be go in, grab a book, do something, you know, make it up, completely out of sequence, completely out of context of what they've been doing. And suddenly, the next time you come back, you're like, whoa, what happened during that time I was gone? So at least when they're this detailed and this specific, these can be handed to the person who's going to fill in, and this is your job for the day, which is great, and all the resources to match it. So that's another reason why we lesson plan. My staff don't lesson plan as specific as this anymore. In your first couple of years of teaching, you do. But after that, you program, and the program is the thing that gets left behind for the next teacher to take on. So it's kind of a bigger picture, not so specific as that. But again, I would write something like that if I was going in to do a one-off lesson. So what do we put into a lesson plan? We put general info, and that's all the stuff at the top. So general info about the lesson, the week, the topic, etc. What should happen during the lesson sequence? Now again, in that teaching and learning cycle, so we begin with assessment, then we aim to plan. So in the planning part is where we would come up with what's going to happen in our lesson sequence. So we plan for programs. This plan is for a lesson, so this is kind of the next step down from the program. Your scope and sequence is kind of the program that you're following. Outcomes and learning intentions. I'm using all the words that you've got on your sheet. We use them as well. Our outcomes for us come from the syllabus documents that the NESSA, it's now called, a group who actually write our syllabus documents for us in New South Wales. Here, your outcomes are coming from the scope and sequence. Now, all of that scope and sequence came from the Buddhist Council's original document, wasn't it? That was where we sort of started, the Buddhist Council, and then we created our own?
No, we totally started from
scratch. Started from scratch, yeah, because that was very deep. So the scope and sequence is your outcome. then the learning intention is on your lesson plans that you get to have a look at as well. So your outcome's the big picture that you want. It might take a couple of lessons to get that. Your lesson intention is what you want on that day in that half an hour space. What do I really want the kids to be able to do by the end? Then, of course, we have time frames, content, resources, and assessment. And you have all of that on yours. And lesson reflection at the end. I'm going to talk a bit more about each one of those as we go through this next part. So lesson planning. Don't worry too much about that. When I give you the whole slideshow, you'll be able to read that yourself. So lesson planning is a really important part of being a teacher. While experienced teachers may appear or not require a plan, it's only because they've probably taught a lesson so many times that a majority of it is in their head. Now, exactly the same thing would be happening here. If you have been a scripture teacher for a number of years, if you heard that, you know, your learning intention was to recognize that maras are our negative state of mind, and you've done that numerous times before, you probably wouldn't need to refer to this as specifically as somebody who's never taught that lesson before. Okay? And as you go through the years of having this developed for you, you'll be able to do that yourself. But to begin with, it's a really essential thing to have. What it also does is it stops inconsistencies from happening across a whole space. So to the Department of Education, Nantian Temple is responsible for delivering the curriculum that you have set in your scope and sequence. So they don't get copies of your lesson plans, but they do have a copy of the scope and sequence. So if, for example, in a school in Parramatta, Nantian Temple's teachers were not teaching in accordance to the scope and sequence, the Department of Education would have a responsibility to question that. Now, how would they know? They probably won't. But it wouldn't be unusual these days for someone to come along one day and check that it's happening. We are accountable for absolutely everything that we do these days. In schools, we have constantly got somebody coming in, checking how we're going and where we're up to. So they want a copy of it so they can see that this is the sequence we have all decided upon that Nantian Temple will deliver to the students across New South Wales. Right, so as much as you might like to wander off and find exciting other things to do, it's okay within the lesson, but when it comes to the outcome, you've got to stick to it. Okay, it's kind of like a little Bible or something. Well, again, not a Bible, but it's in my head. So they'll still have a good idea of how they want and expect the lesson to proceed, whereas inexperienced teachers will need the structure of a good lesson plan. A good plan acts as a guide to your planning. It helps a teacher consider the direction of the lesson and possible pitfalls and diversions. It also helps a teacher keep on track during the lesson, but should not be so restrictive that you don't have flexibility within your class. And I think that's really important too. You know your kids. Venerable Lee or I are not there teaching your kids on that day. You are, and you know them. So be flexible around the lesson plan. Be able to change and move things up a bit if it's not going to work for your kids. If you've once tried role play and role play was horrendous, don't do role play again. Choose another way to do that same activity, but not through role play, because it's just a process. It's just a way of doing it. It's a tool that you might be able to use in that time. You could choose something different if it's not going to work for that group. A lesson plan also serves as a record of what you've taught before enabling you to easily see what to review or later dates and to see what worked and what didn't work with a particular lesson. So it's kind of that nice reflection thing to go, this is what I have to do this week, this is where I'm going to next week. In order to get to there, I need to make sure I've got all of that done first. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to get to that point. So it's good for that as well. Each lesson you teach should follow a certain process that involves preparation, teaching and reflection. So just like in our teaching and learning cycle, where we have to have assessment, then we plan, then we monitor, we reflect, we give feedback, we change, we keep doing the whole process round and round and round in circles. So it's just a big cycle. And that's exactly what these lessons should be as well. A chance for you to have a look, decide whether it worked or not, scribble some notes on it and then have another go. At any time, if there's something I'm not hitting, you let me know. So outcomes come directly from the scope and sequence. They're already done for you. Everything was set up in sequence. Took many, many months to get the scope and sequence to its final form. And it really is just the big picture of what the year looks like, the whole year. So it's broken up into terms. I think you've all got a copy of it anyway. Broken up into terms, and it looks at the whole year focus for those particular kids. And if you're having a look K to 6, you can see that the sequence just gets harder. Same idea, same outcome, just a different way of getting there so that you're refreshing and reanalyzing what you're up to. Learning intentions and success criteria. Now, you're only in there for a short time, so this is something that has been a really big move in the last probably, maybe 5 years, I guess, in teaching. And again, we were talking earlier about the generations of kids that we're teaching at the moment. They're very different to when we went to school ourselves. But the one thing that kids want to know is why they're learning that. We never bothered to ask why. In fact, we were probably too scared to ask why. But these days, my goodness, they will ask you why every time. So if we start with an intention, they can't ask why, because it's the why. Why are we doing this? This is why we're doing this. This is the reason that we're actually bothering to have a look at this particular thing today. So I'm going to let you have a little listen. This is the guru man of learning intention and success criteria in education. I'm sure this is the one. Oh, no, it's not.